Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Tanya the Communication Doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do.
Hi, this is Real Stories. I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And I'm really excited today because today I have on my show Tony McLelland. And Tony's title is Critical Friend. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Tanya. How are you?
Oh, I'm absolutely fabulous. It's such a lovely day today. And I'm glad to kind of have you into my series 3. And it's really exciting to have you on the show today and to talk about your title, Critical Friend. So I'm going to start going straight into it and I'm going to dive deep and ask you why you call yourself a critical friend.
Okay, well, thanks for inviting me onto your show, Tanya. Critical friend. Now, I call myself critical friend because that's exactly what I am. Now, when people search, they may not necessarily search for critical friends, but I think the term, it's really important that I am authentic to myself, you know. So people tend to come to me when they have a problem, they have an issue, troubleshooting, problem solving, some kind of crisis, you know, and I don't necessarily pretty things up. I'm very tactful, but I will tell it as it is.
I love that. You'll just speak openly about whatever problem. So what is the majority of the problems that people come to you with?
Well, if I'm going to kind of generalize, people tend to kind of come to me for 3 or 4 different things. And they are in business if they want to make more money, save more money, deal with some kind of compliance issue that is associated with a regulatory body, or some kind of crisis management in leadership, or something around that. Something needs to get done. When people are generally doing okay and plodding along fine, they don't tend to want to reach for me. It's when a change needs to happen. So it's some kind of you know, business turnaround, or you know, something that's presenting them with a difficulty or a change in the way that they need to approach their business.
Oh, I love that.
So that's kind of where people come to me. And there are most occasions when the call comes very late in the day, so it means that I've got to get ready very quickly. There are other times where people plan things out and know that they need. Because I go into business at the sharper end, you know, when there's something happening, it's normally going at a pace of 70 miles per hour at that point. What I do is I do the 360 and I bring some of that advice, knowledge, experience and expertise to people that are starting out in business at very early stages so that they can avoid some of those pitfalls. So the work that I do is predominantly around working with directors, leaders, C-suite, very senior personnel, who are in business, and helping them with their business. Because we all know, Tanya, that actually business, and when you lead an organization, there's an element of your personality that rubs off into that organization. So it's really about working with the individual person, understanding them and really connecting with them. Because when you connect with them, then you'll really get an understanding for their business. So that's my or friends.
Totally. That's brilliant. Now, what comes to mind as you're talking there about your title, Critical Friend, and what you do, what comes to me is transitioning, helping people to transition, transformation, and really making a change. And that, as you said, that you bring an element of yourself, there's an imprint of yourself, and I think that's really special. Just to kind of dive deep, because this is real stories, I want to go back and learn a little bit more about Tony. So I'm going to dial back in time and I'm going to ask you a little bit about your childhood. And I want you to tell me one of your best memories as a child.
One of my best memories as a child? Bit of an on-the-spot question, but I think I have generally really, really good memories. And I think I'm very family orientated, and I just have fond memories of, you know, our Sundays, how we used to spend our Sundays as a family. You know, my dad would be, you know, playing music, you know, on a Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, and we'd play his music, and my mum would be in the kitchen, and just that whole family vibe, you know. So that's the kind of childhood that I was brought up in. You know, it's very family orientated. We'd go and visit family as a family, and spend the day, spend the weekend. You know, it was really, it was all about family at that time.
That's beautiful.
You know? And connecting with others. So yeah, and my parents were great parents, and they were very welcoming of my, you know, of my friends that I went to school with. I mean, I've got friends now that I went to primary and secondary school with that will actually just go and visit my mum, you know?
Yeah.
And just go round, have a cup of tea with her and things like that. And I won't even know, yet they're my friends, but that's how it is. It's like my mum's door was always kind of open, and I tend to refer to, you know, my mum and dad's house as the refuge almost.
You know what, it's really interesting hearing that, because I can really identify with it, because my childhood was quite similar in terms of I come from a big family, and often our door was always opened. I want to ask you, just to get a picture of Tony's childhood and Tony's family, what sort of music would be playing on the Sunday morning?
Oh, well, my dad would be playing probably something like a bit of Bob Marley, a bit of Exodus, maybe some John Holt. But you know what? He wasn't even averse to a little bit of Jim Reeves, I remember.
Oh, my parents like Jim Reeves too.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm just kind of trying to think. There was a bit of a mixture.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit of a mixture of music, but it'd be those typical, you know, John Holt, those kind of things.
Brilliant.
Those kind of things were the ones.
It's
lots
just
of singing, lots of singing as well.
It sounds to me like you were brought up in a very lively household. So that's really lovely to get that picture of you and your family and having so many people around you. So just to kind of touch on that, would you find, in terms of finding your voice with so many people around you, was that difficult for you, or was it easy for you? Do you think it helped to have such a big family and so many people around you in terms of finding your voice?
Yeah, I think when I say that we weren't necessarily a big family, but the extended family was quite big, if you see what I mean. They weren't necessarily always around us. We were very tight as a unit, my mum and dad and, you know, my sisters. But you know, I think it was really just nice to just have that tight unit. I felt at the time that I felt like I was more geared towards my dad than my mum. My mum showed me lots of things in the kitchen and stuff like that. But me and my dad, we used to sit down, have long conversations. Lots of reasoning, we used to call it, you know, and very many a discussion was had in that way. But for me, I think growing up, there were two things that kind of stand out for me around, you know, around things. And that was the fact that I was a Christmas baby, and my birthday was around Christmas time. So for me, it was really important that my family made me feel special, and they did.
So Tony, you would mention there about being the middle child. Do you want to talk about that a little bit more for me, please, about being the middle child and being a Christmas child as well, because that must have been really interesting.
Because what I was kind of alluding to is the fact that there were two things that really do stand out. As much as I had a really great childhood, we had a great family and all the rest of it, two of the things that stood out, and that was about the fact that I was born at Christmas time, and so Christmas and New Year overshadowed my birthday. So my one day to shine was overshadowed by, you know, these two major events. And what it meant was that, you know, I didn't really have my friends around me, school and stuff like that. By the time I go back into school, you know, it was a distant memory. Mm. And when family gave Christmas presents, they would give Christmas presents, and, you know, my birthday was just kind of over, you know, almost forgotten about. The other thing was the middle child. I was the middle child, and so therefore what it means is that my family were great. My mum and dad were great. They never made me feel any different as a middle child. However, it was the feeling that other people brought, because if there was any gifts or any money that was for the children, it was always the oldest that got the extra or the youngest that got the extra. It was never really the middle person. So, you know, there is a little bit of a stigma around it. And I think that I felt that I was a little bit at a disadvantage. And so what it done, those two things shaped me in terms of when I was growing up. It was like, how do I create my own identity? How do I stand out for me?
That's interesting.
That was really important for me as an individual, not really anybody else. It didn't have an impact on anybody else. So,
yeah.
But, So that was kind of it. You know, I remember, you know, as family used to come and visit and presents and money exchange for the kids, it was always, you know, I'm making it sound like a real big deal.
No, it's we know what it sounds to me. Like, I think, you know, we're all unique in our own way. And it is interesting me hearing this feeling of being the middle child. I mean, I'm the youngest, and there's stuff that goes with that too. But what I am really hearing is, you said, you know, you felt that you had to find your own way of standing out. And what I wanted to ask you was, what was that for you? Because sometimes they could say that the middle child is the creative child, the middle child is the mediator. You know, it's said in many books when they talk about...
Well, I was, because I kind of felt like I was stuck in between the oldest and the youngest. And so what it meant was that if something was going wrong in the house, or we were in trouble with my dad or whatever it was, you know, it was like, well, actually, you know, the older one can get away or the younger one can get away, and does it come to me? Do you see what I mean?
So
I kind of felt like there were times when the focus was on me as the middle child, and then there were times, you know, and it was particularly around conflict,
Yes.
But then there were times when the attention was directed away from me as a middle child.
Yeah.
So it was kind of swings and roundabouts, and I hope I've kind of explained that clearly.
No, you have. No, that's really interesting, as I said, because often, you know, there are books out there where they talk about where you come as a child from an only child, and the whole thing of the middle child syndrome from the psychological perspective. And what you hit on interesting was the mediator, because that's often something that's said, you know, I think really one could be the mediator, but for some reason they say there's a link with the mediation and also the middle child sometimes being the more creative. And these are just things that are said in kind of psychological books. But what's really interesting, Tony, is that you touched on that, and also touching on you not having your day. And I think that's really important sometimes for us as human beings, to, when your birthday is something that is a time where you feel that you are acknowledged, you feel that you shine, you know, you shine your light, and you shine your light brightly at that sort of time in kind of most families. So it's really interesting how that has affected you. But what I want to come to is, I want to dive a little bit deeper in terms of asking you, moving forward kind of in your adult life, what has been challenging for you, and in terms of what has been challenging for you and why do you do the work that you do? You know, has that challenge led you to do what you do now, or is that separate? But just to answer that question is what that transition is for you and how you came out of that challenge, however small or big it may be.
I think that there's a few things. I mean, you know, my older sister died when I was 17 years old. So all of a sudden I was thrust into this whole thing of, now you're the oldest child.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, and just kind of not really understanding what was happening at that time. She was ill and stuff, but you know, just not really understanding, and then taking on that role of the older child when I hadn't been previously.
Yeah,
so that for me was a change, but it was also something that, I mean, it brought my family, you know, a great amount of sadness, and seeing my mum and dad, you know, maneuvering through it and seeing them so sad, it was really, 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 really difficult, because I've not seen that side of them. So
yes,
that kind of was a significant thing. Then there was something else that in my 20s, you know, I had somebody that was quite close to me, and they died as well. I found that I was so caught up with all the ins and outs of what was going on around that it really kind of triggered my thought process into, I want to find out some answers. I want to find out a little bit more about what's going on here. And it really kind of provoked my thing about, you know, the law and wanting to understand the law.
Yes.
I'd always grown up wanting to be a teacher of some kind, but at this point here, it was more about understanding the law and legal processes and things like that. So that was really something for me. And then I know I've kind of talked about death, but it does actually have an impact. And I think one of the big ones was when my father passed away. You know, you know, he was like my idol. He was like my role model. He
yes.
was just such a pillar of the community. And, you know, he was great. And I just kind of felt like the things that he'd done, he was a good man. He, you know, everybody went to him for advice and stuff like that. He never done anything wrong. He never crossed the law at all. You know, the only things that he did do, the drink and smoke, but that was it.
Absolutely.
And he was the kind of person that if you had a problem, you wanted him on side. He would say to me, is there something wrong? And I'd say, no. And he'd say, okay, that's fine. But when it gets worse, I don't want to know. And then I'd be like, well, okay, yeah, there is something wrong, and this is what it is. Because he would always be able to give me the advice that I needed at that time and make me feel strong that it would be okay and, you know, we'll work it out kind of thing. Do you see what I mean? And I think as a young person, you want that strength from somebody that's always there. And for that to come in the form of someone, you know, that showed such great, you know, masculinity and an alpha male, then that's even better, because for me, I felt really, really protected by that, you know, and it was important. And it also meant that you know, you could take a little risk with some things, because you knew that there was somebody that was there. It's almost like, you know, he always used to take us swimming and, you know, riding our bikes and things like that. And so you know that you can go in the deep end because he's there. He's going to reach an arm out if needed. And it was always that kind of feeling that being beside him in life was like. So for me, later on, my later years has been more about, you know, carrying on his legacy and what would Dad do? And you know, it was when I was at his funeral that, you know, this is where a lot of other things came out, that he was helping so many people. You know, if it wasn't for him, this wouldn't have happened. And it just kind of, So for me, I just kind of felt like I needed to continue the legacy that he'd started and always try and do the right thing.
You know what? I think that is so powerful, Toni. There's lots of things in there when you spoke about grief from your sister to your friend and then with your father, because when someone passes away, there is that shift. And then there is also that thing about legacy, as you quite rightly said, you know, when you lose a father or a mother. I mean, I've lost both my parents. I totally can identify in terms of wanting to leave a legacy when you realise the legacy that they've left, but also that kind of male role model, that support network, I suppose, the protector, the nurturer, the support. It's almost like rebuilding yourself almost. So I feel when I ask you about your challenge, I think that's probably is the grief is actually a real challenging experience for most people. But I suppose it's how we find our way through it. Because I wouldn't say find a solution necessarily, because I think grief is something that can last, once it happens, can last for a very long time. And it's just finding those coping mechanisms in terms of how you deal with it. And from what I get with what you've just said to me is you finding your legacy, you giving back, you helping others. And it sounded to me like your dad was that real kind of patriarch in the life for you, and helped you to kind of find that wisdom and that love, and that's what you do now. So that's really beautiful.
And I think that, because what happens even at the time when he got ill and was diagnosed ill, it was at a time for me where, you know, I just landed this massive contract and it was like a dream, you know, for me. And it was just like a real crucial time for me, career-wise.
Yeah.
But actually, I had to put that to one side, because I can remember every day after work, I would have a ritual and I would go and see him at the hospital and stuff like that. And actually, it got to a point where it was just too much for me. And I think that what happens with us is that we run our lives at 80% all the time, sometimes 100%. And then when something comes up, you haven't got the capacity to deal with it, and something gives. Do you see what I mean? It's,
yes.
it's like that glass that's kind of three quarters full, or three quarters full. And you think, okay, well, this is great. And then you push it up and it's completely at capacity. And then you think, oh, I can function at capacity. It's great. And then something happens and you just haven't got the capacity to deal with that. You haven't got the time, the space. And I just thought, you know what? I just can't function like this. I need to spend some time with my dad, because the prognosis wasn't great. I need to spend some time with him. I need to, you know, and rather than spending time fighting, you know, the bad decisions that have been made in his diagnosis, I wanted to really kind of use that time to create some memories and have those fruitful discussions, even though it was really difficult. And it's like, well, when you're in that situation, what do you actually talk about? You talk about the anger and the bitterness at the people that have made these decisions, or do you actually have that as cherished, treasured times? And so for me, I chose the latter, and I found great, you know, a lot of great things came out of that. And it was an opportunity for me to really, really connect with him even deeper, have a real understanding of things that were important to him and things that he wanted. And it's almost shaped me a little bit. But what it done, that whole experience, what it done is it kind of showed me that, do you know what? Things are good and you run at capacity, but you know, when something happens, something's got to give. And for me, my job, I just gave up my job. I couldn't, there was nothing more that I could do. I just said, right, I'm sorry, I can't do this. And I've got to concentrate on, you know, spending that time with my dad. It was nice to just kind of, in the beginning, get away and just put my head in a different space. But at the same time, there were his affairs that I need to take care of as I was going along as well. And you just can't do everything. You just literally cannot do it. And so for me, I always feel that, you know, since then it's kind of like, you know, I just work at a pace. I, you know, do things at my pace, what I'm doing very well. And I don't want to get stressed out about lots of things. And, you know, so for me, my life is changing and it's evolving all the time, you know. And and quite often I look back and think about how much I've changed and how much I've grown, and you know, and over the last maybe year and a half, couple of years as well, where, you know, I know it's a lot of people don't talk about it, but let me put it out there, menopause and stuff, it can actually be such a defining thing for females that it affects the way that you do things. It can affect the way that you think in business, in the workplace, at home, you know?
Totally.
And there needs to be more of an understanding of it. But for me, hopefully it hasn't changed me and what I do too much. But what it has done for me personally is created a lot of space for me to self-reflect and do lots of self-awareness. You know, am I overreacting? Am I dealing with things the way that I should be? Do you see what I mean? It's kind of like I evaluate myself more because if I'm going through it, for example, that's for me to go through it. Mm. It's not fair that it's inflicted upon others too. Do you see what I mean?
You know what? As I said, I'm just listening now. I'm just taking everything that you've just said in because I feel... You know, as a podcaster as well, to listen is really important. And for me, as I reflect, there is so much richness there in terms of that transition in your life. And how I would kind of put this interview together is, at the beginning of the interview, you called yourself the critical friend. And you referred to helping people with that transition, transformation, and that change maker. And as we've discovered in this interview, a little bit about your childhood, and about the grief that you've experienced. And I suppose when you experience that grief, you're constantly having to transition, reflect and change and build yourself. And I feel, Tony, that's exactly what you have done. And that's exactly what you have done in your life. You've been able to switch and pivot, transition, build yourself up, give back to other people, help people to grow and into that strength. And that's kind of where I want to leave it today, because I just feel there's just so much there that you bring to the table as that critical friend, Tony. But just to round it off, I just want to ask you, is there any kind of inspirational words or anything inspirational? It doesn't have to be from somebody famous. It could be something your dad said that you want to share with my listeners.
I think one of the things that my dad would always say to me is, you know, never give up sure for unsure. So that's something that resonates with me a lot, and it helps with decision making. And sometimes I share it with clients as well, in terms of that. But I think the main thing is really, it's about people have expectations of you as an individual. And quite often we conform to those expectations. And I just think that, you know, you've got to kind of step away from that and look at you as an individual. What makes you happy? What do you actually want? You know, what are you good at? What, you know, rather than we're always kind of shaping ourselves around what other people want, but actually take some time, think about you, think about what you want, what really makes you happy. And, you know, just work towards that. That's what I would say.
That's beautiful.
Just be you, do you, be you, and just get happiness in your life. I think being happy is really, really important. We've only got one life, you know? And
So true. I love that. And I think that's a lovely way to end the show. Just be you and find out what's within you. Just be you. Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming on my show, Tony. I really enjoyed speaking to you, and I really enjoyed learning about your real story. Adios. My takeaways from this show is that Tony had to transition so many times in her life, and it taught her how to reflect and how to adapt, and sometimes how to nourish her energy so she can then change, switch and pivot to suit her life. And I also found it interesting that she calls herself the critical friend. I found it very fitting for her, considering effort that she's been through and the transformation in her life to help others, to criticise from the outside, but also help others to nourish, to reflect and to move forward. Thank you.